ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
आदिश्मशानाथाय संस्काराय संस्कृतोर्विजा इन्द्रियेषु क्रियाय ज्ञान ज्ञानदीपेषु जुहति।
A twice born Brahman gains his life by the grace of his parents. Through the process of purification, known as Garbhadhana. There are also other processes of purification until the end of life, when the funeral ceremony, Antyeshti Kriya, is performed. Thus, in due course, a qualified Brahman becomes uninterested in materialistic activities and sacrifices. But he offers the sensual sacrifices in full knowledge into the working senses, which are illumined by the fire of knowledge. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Those interested in materialistic activities remain in the cycle of birth and death. Pravritti Marg, or the inclination to stay in the material world to enjoy varieties of sense gratification, has been explained in the previous verse. Now in this verse it is explained that one who has perfect Brahmanical knowledge rejects the process of elevation to higher planets and accepts Nivritti Marg. In other words, he prepares himself to go back home, back to Godhead. Those who are not Brahmins, but atheists, do not know what is Pravritti Marg or Nivritti Marg. They simply want to obtain pleasure at any cost. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore training devotees to give up the Pravritti Marg and accept the Nivritti Marg in order to return home back to Godhead. This is a little difficult to understand, but it is very easy if one takes to Krishna consciousness seriously and tries to understand Krishna. A Krishna conscious person can understand that performing yajna according to the karma khanda system is a useless waste of time, and that merely giving up the karma khanda and accepting the process of speculation is also unfruitful. Therefore, Narottam Das Thakur has sung in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika, Karma Khanda Jnana Khanda Kevala Vishera Bhanda Amrita Bhaliya Yeva Khoi Nana Yoni Sadapi Re Kadarya Bhakshanakare Thara Janma Adhapati Jai. A life of karma khanda or jnana khanda is like a poison pot, and one who takes to such a life is doomed. In the karma khanda system, one is destined to accept birth and death again and again. Similarly with jnana khanda, one falls down again to this material world. Only worship of the Supreme Person offers one the safety of going back home, back to Godhead. Translation. A twice-born Brahma gains his life by the grace of his parents through the process of purification known as Garbhadhana. There are also other processes of purification until the end of life, when the funeral ceremony, Antyeshti Kriya, is performed. Thus, in due course, a qualified Brahman becomes uninterested in materialistic activities and sacrifices, but he offers the sensual sacrifices in full knowledge into the working senses, which are illuminated by the fire of knowledge. It is herein described. The system of Varnashram Dharma, in which one is gradually elevated to indifference to the objects of the senses and complete surrender in the service of Sri Krishna. It is described by Srila Narada Muni that the Brahman gains his life by the grace of his parents through the process of purification known as Garbhadhan. You see, human form of life at every stage, according to Vedic culture, the most important aspect of one's life is purification. Some very foolish materialistic people, they consider that what is the benefit of taking to the purificatory process of spiritual life when one is young. While one is young, one should enjoy. And at the time when one exhausts all of his propensities for sense enjoyment, at the fag end of life, after dedicating one's activities to one's family, one's society, one's nation, that is the proper time to take to spiritual life. After all, there's a time and place for everything. But here it is described that according to civilized human beings, the process of purification must begin at the ultimately earliest stages of your birth, which means at the time of your conception. According to the Vedic system, your life begins at the time of conception. In fact, it was commonly understood that when you are born, you are 1 year old, because you've been living within the womb for approximately 1 year. Therefore, here it is very, very strongly instructed that the purification of your consciousness should begin at the very time you are conceived within the womb of your mother. And from that point until the time of your funeral ceremony, the antyeshti kriya, your whole life is a series of processes of purification. And it is through the gradual process of purification that one becomes purified from all the desire to lord it over material nature. And one becomes attached to the service of the Lord and his devotees. Here it is specifically describing that this is the life in which every Brahman must accept. To follow all the process of purification throughout one's life. Otherwise, one cannot be considered truly a Brahman. It is not simply a question of birth. It is a question of accepting the responsibility of a Brahman. Just like we may use as an example, a person may be born a son of a policeman. But unless that person accepts the responsibilities and the austerities that are the duties of a policeman, will anyone consider him a policeman? So a Brahman is one who, by his qualities in life and by his acts, he behaves according to the duties of a Brahman. And this holds true for all the four varnas and all the four ashrams. But we should understand that all of the duties for a Brahman Kshatriya Vaishya Sudra, for a Brahmachari Grihastha Vanaprastha and Sannyas, all of these Vedic injunctions prescribed are exclusively meant for the purpose of purification of the consciousness, to gradually strip one's heart of all his propensities to enjoy separate from God. Therefore, we should know very clearly that this life is not meant for any other purpose but to become purified. This is the duty of every human being. And especially for those who are Brahmins, because they are the leaders of society. In this room today, we do not have any guests. We have only very serious, initiated, or aspiring initiated devotees who very soon, if not already, will accept the sacred thread in Brahminical initiation. So this verse is specifically speaking to all of us that the duty of a Brahman is that at every stage of life, at every moment of the life, he must be struggling and striving for purification. He will accept whatever is purifying, and he will reject whatever is unpurifying. The most important quality of a Brahman is his detachment, his desire to live a simple and austere life. One of the qualities of a Brahman is simplicity. Simplicity is very simple. It means no duplicity. One is only duplicitous when one is desirous to lord it over material nature. Because this is a world of duality. And to the degree we become attached to the dualistic principle, that I like this and I do not like this, to the degree we are attached to getting our way, which means to the degree we are attached to lording it over material nature, to that extent, our whole consciousness is filled with the dualities of honor and dishonor, pleasure and pain, happiness and distress, gain and loss. Therefore, on the basis of this principle of material contamination, we have to do anything and say anything in order to, as they say, fulfill our purposes and get ahead in this world. And therefore, this breeds duplicity. So, in order to actually live a simple life, one has to live an austere life. In order to have simplicity of mind, one must have a simplicity of lifestyle, which means one must be detached from gain or loss, pleasure or pain, honor or dishonor, happiness or distress. One must simply be seeking purification of consciousness. Therefore, such a person sees no one as his enemy and no one as his friend. He only sees how I can serve Krishna and how I can help every living being. This is simplicity. As soon as we put ourselves first, our selfish interests first, immediately there is duplicity. But when we put Krishna first, and when we put those persons who we are meant to be the servant of first, which means every living being who is part of Krishna, then our life becomes very simple. And this is described as a very great quality of a Brahman. Because a Brahman is interested not in getting ahead in this world, but in purifying his consciousness to free himself from the slightest trace of desire to get ahead in this world. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes the story of Bharat Maharaj. In summary, he was a very great king. He was the senior most son of the incarnation of Krishna himself, Rishabhdev. And Bharat Maharaj became such a fearless ruler of this world and such a selfless, compassionate king that the entire planet Earth to this day, according to the Shastra, is named after him, Bharat Varsha, the planet of King Bharat. It is described that although he ruled the kingdom and dealt with all the situations, all the problems, he had such a simple and pure heart that internally he was always simply thinking, how can I best serve Krishna? And therefore, when he found that his children were old enough to take over the kingdom, it is described he left his beautiful wife, he left his beautiful throne, he left his royal kingdom, just as a man leaves his stool after it has passed, with utter disgust for all these material conditions, he just walked off into the forest. He understood that as a Kshatriya, he had to rule the kingdom for his purification. He did not rule the kingdom in any way, shape, or form for his own enjoyment or for his own fame. He did it because it was his duty, and by performing his duty, he would be purified and he would help up purify others. I was just reading one letter by Srila Prabhupada where a devotee was asking Prabhupada that he had taken second initiation, he had studied the Shastras very carefully, he wanted to write literature, Vaishnava literature. And Prabhupada quoted Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there Prabhupada explains that Krishnadas Kaviraj, in this verse, he is saying that I have no qualification to write this book, Chaitanya Charitamrita. I am simply writing it because it is the order of my superiors for my purification. And then Prabhupada began to describe that a devotee never does anything for his own interests in regard to fame, distinction, wealth. Whatever he does in Krishna consciousness, he does for his purification. Many people want to write books because they want to become famous authors. But Prabhupada says a devotee never considers. A devotee is not even so concerned if nobody ever reads the book. He writes the book for his purification. Whether it's accepted or rejected by society doesn't mean that much. In this way, whatever a devotee does is with this motive. So Maharaj Bharat, he ruled the kingdom for his purification, and at the proper time, at the proper stage of life in a Kshatriya's existence, he left the kingdom behind to live in the jungles, eating only the raw fruits and berries and herbs that grow, living in nothing but tree bark, on the bank of the Gandaki River. He lived a life of severe penance and tapasya for his purification. And it is described that one day a deer was being chased by a ferocious tiger. And the deer was pregnant, and she was running away, and she went to jump over the river. And as she jumped over the river, the ferocious animal began to roar. And out of fear, she had a miscarriage. And the tiny little child fell into the river. And then the mother, approaching the other side, seeing her child in such a distress, in such a helpless condition, not being able to help her. The natural quality of a parent is they feel so deeply for the child that the mother deer died. So Bharat Maharaj, he was thinking that there is no one on earth that can save this deer except me. So he took the deer in his loving hands and protected it. And then he was thinking, now how will this deer eat? Does not have a mother. Who will protect it from the dangerous animals in the forest? So Bharat Maharaj began to care for this deer very carefully. And gradually, he became very attached to this deer. He developed a maternal, paternal affection for this deer. He became like the mother and father. And he worried about the deer just like a mother or father worries about its child. When the deer would not return home on time, he would just be thinking, where is my, the food is prepared. He would go off through the forest, where are you, where are you? He would cry when the deer would be in its arms and he'd caress it with great affection. In this way, he passed his days, and at the time of death, naturally, he thought of this deer. So he took his next birth as a deer. But you see, because it was an arrangement of Krishna that it wasn't for his own selfish purposes that he became attached to the deer, but it was out of a natural sentiment of compassion. And because of his sincere desire for self-realization, although Krishna gave him the form of a deer, he did not abandon him. He gave him full awareness of his previous life. So as a deer, Bharat, his only interest was just to go to the places where the saints and sages were reciting the glories of the Lord, and he would just hear from them there. And he was always anxious just just to associate with great souls and hear their narrations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from their lotus mouths. And very soon, that deer left his body. And he took a birth again in the family of Brahmins. And in this third birth, he had complete awareness by the grace of Krishna, Paramatma, of his previous two births. So he was very cautious that in this birth, I'm not going to entangle myself in any way, shape, or form in any type of material attachments. In fact, the only way to do that in this world, because this world is so entangling, if I have to completely disguise myself as a madman. So although his father was a very, very distinguished and qualified Brahmin, he would be constantly trying to train his son, but his son would do everything the opposite. Because he understood full well that the only purpose of this existence is to finish off this material world and purify myself. And he became an avadhuta. His name is Jadbharat. His father, it is described, he would never bathe, he would never wash. His skin was black, his hair was matted, his nails were long. His Brahmin thread was black. His father would try to teach him how to pass stool. He'd say, now first you pass stool, then you wash yourself. He would wash himself first, then pass stool, and that was it, finished. His father would say, my God, how disgusting. He didn't know what to do with this boy. Finally, his brothers, who were qualified Brahmins as well, they thought the only use of this boy is let's just use him to keep the crows out of the agricultural fields, and they would just have him stand like a scarecrow just to keep the crows out, and he was very happy just to do like that. He had no objection. And while he was out there standing like a scarecrow, some dacoits who wanted to perform a human sacrifice to the goddess Kali, they saw him, and they thought, this man is a complete madman. But look, he has a very beautiful body. He's very strong. And he's very handsome. He will be a very fit offering to our goddess. So they just picked him up out of the agricultural field. Jadbharat didn't care. He was completely indifferent. Whatever Krishna wants to do to me, I do not mind. It's all for my purification. Because when a person is accustomed to all sorts of reversals in life, a person just sees Krishna everywhere. His brothers, the whole society, they completely ridiculed him, humiliated him, physically abused him. They thought he was a madman. But in his heart, he was the most wise, the most sensitive, and the most sincere man on earth. He was just accepting all this for his purification. So when these dacoits took him, he did not mind. He was depending on Krishna. He did not say a word. He did not try to fight to defend himself. And they bathed his body very nicely. And they put nice clothes on him. And then they put him before the goddess Kali. And then they said, Kali Mata, here is the blood of your human sacrifice to satisfy your thirst for blood. Of course, it is described in the Bhagavatam that those who are deeply possessed by the modes of ignorance, they worship these ghastly forms of the demigods. So they took the sacred sword of their puja and they raised it. And with all their force, they started to come down to sever the head of Jad Bharat. But within the heart of Bharat, there was only pure devotion to Krishna. There was only the helpless, simple dependence on Krishna's mercy. He did not have to defend himself. Because when one has this simplistic devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna says in Gita, Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. To my pure devotee, I am the protector. He is never vanquished. So in this condition, Kali, who happens to be a great Vaishnavi, one of the most glorious servants of Lord Hari, in fact, she is an expansion of the Goddess of Fortune herself. But she takes this thankless position in the service of Narayan just to give a chance for those in the lower modes of ignorance to make some spiritual advancement. She became so outraged that they were going to commit this offense to her devotee that the deity herself leaped off of the altar, snatched the sword from the hands of the dacoit, and started to scream with a shrilling laughter, and began to cut off the heads of each of the gang of the dacoits. And then she took the heads and hilariously laughing with a shrilling sound vibration, which was thundering throughout all directions. She was playing with their heads and bouncing them and throwing them and cutting them, and the dacoits were just being completely massacred till every single one of them was mutilated. Krishna, let your will be done. At that time, Bharat Maharaj went into the jungles. And it is described that there was a king named Rahugana. And he was going on a royal procession in the beautiful royal palanquin. And the person who was on one side of the palanquin, there were four carriers. He had some difficulty and he could no longer carry the palanquin. So the king's procession was at a standstill. So they had to find a very stout and strong man. And they happened to see in the forest Jad Bharat. So they asked him to come. So of course Jad Bharat would not resist anyone. He would do whatever anyone asked him to do. But he would always do it all wrong, purposely, just so he wouldn't get any credit. He knew as soon as you do something good, you become glorified, and then you become proud, and then you become attached. Huh? Isn't that correct? So it's better if you just do everything completely wrong, then everyone condemns you, and everyone just thinks you're totally useless, and then there's no question of becoming materially attached to anything. Huh? He wouldn't even talk. He appeared like a man who was deaf and dumb. Because he was afraid if he began to speak, people would think he was learned, and then he would get proud. Huh? So they said to him, oh, you are a stout young man. You come and you carry the king's palanquin. He just went, So he agreed. So they took him. They put him on one side of the palanquin. They began to walk. He was very strong. Everything was going very smoothly. And all of a sudden, the king felt a very bad jolt. All of a sudden, one side of the palanquin just stopped. And the king almost fell off. What is this? And Jad Bharat stopped because some ants were on the road. And he was afraid he might step on the ant. So he stopped. But everyone else kept going because no one else cared about ants. Huh? So the king, he was very disturbed. Who is doing this? They said, it's him, it's him. And he didn't say anything. He
king said, "Do not you stop ever again. I am the king. You are my servant. Now proceed." They proceeded again. And Judd Bharat was very nicely caring. He was very strong, living in the jungles. And then, another ant. He immediately stopped. And as he stopped, the whole pelican went, and one side just almost flipped. And Maharaj Rahugna was very angry. He said, if you do this again, you will be killed. This is an offense to the king. Judd Bharat didn't say anything. Yes, of course. So they continued on. And they went for some time. And then by the arrangement of God, another ant on the road, Judd Bharat stopped. At this time, the king was so furious, he just began to scream and yell and chastise and blaspheme this poor man. "I am the king. You are the subject. Do you not understand? The king is the representative of God. You must die." And the king was about to order his death. And he was so angry. And Judd Bharat just stood there. He was not disturbed, nor was he elated by the king's actions. He was simply seeing it as the divine arrangement of Krishna. And then finally, Rahugana Maharaj, he said, "Say something, do something. What kind of crazy man are you?" And then Judd Bharat, because although he was taking the role of an avadhuta, in his heart he was actually a most compassionate and loving Vaishnav. He saw that here is finally an opportunity to preach to somebody who will listen. So he began to speak. He said, "My dear king, you are thinking that you are the king and you are thinking that I am the servant. But this is all an illusion. Because in next birth, I may be the king and you may be the servant. So who are you? This is all your great illusion that you are thinking you are the body and you are thinking I am my body. We are not these bodies. This is all a mental concoction. And the greatest enemy is our own mind. In fact, our mind is our only enemy. Because our mind is constantly sankalpa, vikalpa, accepting one thing, rejecting another thing on the basis of the bodily conception of life for sense gratification. Therefore, the purpose of human life is to become purified of the mind's tendencies for enjoyment." And he spoke in this way. Several chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam are the beautiful, illustrious instructions of Judd Bharat to King Rahugna. And when Maharaj Rahugna heard the piercingly purifying words of Judd Bharat, he realized that this is the greatest man on earth. And he came down off of his palanquin, and he put his head adorned with his golden crown on the feet of Judd Bharat, and he surrendered. And through this beautiful narration, we understand that in every stage of life, we should be striving and struggling for purification. We should not be concerned with the external appearance of how things work out for us in this world. We should only be concerned with how we are becoming purified by whatever circumstance comes into our life. Whether there is failure or success, whether there is happiness or distress, honor or dishonor, pleasure or pain, a devotee simply sees every situation as an opportunity to become purified. He is not so concerned with how things work out from the sensual perspective. He's only concerned with the purification that takes place in that circumstance. And the purification takes place to the extent we accept every opportunity as an opportunity to serve Krishna and serve his devotees.
Sarvapadiva nirmoktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchyate.
That the same mind and senses that are now causing us, due to mental concoction and attachment, so much entanglement, those same minds and senses that are engaged in Krishna's service, Rishikesha's service, become the very basis of our purification. So therefore, a devotee's only purpose in life is to engage in the service of Lord for his purification. A devotee is not concerned what my occupation is, what my occupation isn't, what this person thinks about me or what this person doesn't think about me. A devotee doesn't think in terms of how much money I do have or how much money I do not have. A devotee is just thinking in terms of how I can best purify my life. Without purification, even if you are very materially successful in this world, your whole life is being wasted. All of your endeavors are simply creating a deeper, more miserable condition of bondage. Huh? Therefore, at every stage of life, in every circumstance of life, from the time of conception to the time one's body is put on the fire of cremation, a human being should always be striving and struggling to purify his mind and purify his senses. And he should have really no other objective in life than that. And the most sublime and powerful means of purification is to always think of Krishna. To always think of Krishna and always do the will of Krishna. The will of Krishna is coming down through the disciplic succession, through the spiritual masters, the great acharyas. When they speak to us, we can understand that they are speaking the will of Krishna. And we learn to always think of Krishna by acting according to their instructions. Sometimes the great souls, they tell us so many duties we must perform. Or through their representative, they're telling us so many duties to perform. Understand that by performing these duties properly, both internally as well as externally, we are being trained how to always think of Krishna. And in this life, and at the time of death, if we can learn in the proper service attitude to always think of Krishna, then we return back home, back to Godhood. But you see, unless you have a humble service attitude, you cannot always think of Krishna. Thinking of Krishna is not simply based on your abilities to control your mind. No. Krishna says in Gita, Saravasya chaham hridisha nivishtoma tasmitira jnanam apohanam cha. That he within the heart is the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. You can only remember Krishna when it is Krishna's desire to manifest himself within your mind. It is not by your endeavor. And Krishna manifests himself to the humble devotee who is in the proper service attitude. One may be very scholarly and always be talking about Krishna, but if he is proud and he does not have a proper service attitude, at the time of the greatest need, Krishna will not be there. At the time of death, when your whole body is just full of pain and full of bewilderment, and there are just endless distractions all around you and within you, it is not possible to think of Krishna unless Krishna reveals himself to you at that time. Huh? And Krishna reveals himself according to the humility of our attitude to serve. So therefore, the spiritual master and his representatives, they are meant to train us how to think of Krishna by training us how to attract Krishna to appear in our mind by being